Welcome to the Warm Down Podcast. Just like the Twitter space, this is a podcast to have a serious discussion about the state of the top six in the English Premier League. Now, in studio with me tonight, today, I have Kylian Msafiri, who is one big Manchester United enthusiast as much as he is a journalist. I also have here Peter Peuri, one of our reporters here at the Standard Group, who is also a big sports enthusiast, and Vincent Kejitan, the deputy entertainment editor here at Standard Media Group, here to discuss, just to warm down on the English Premier League and per se, discuss the top six, the state of the top six in the race so far. So gentlemen, karibuni sana. I hope you are happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I hope this is going to be a big discussion because it's a new season and the top six are not specifically where we expect them to be. Not everybody is where they're supposed to be. And we have big fixtures coming along, but we just started the season, so there's a long, long way to go. But it's not the way, it hasn't started the exact same way as season two, and seeing Liverpool, for example, where they are, it's a different season.
It's a different season indeed. And Vincent, just like Theuri said, a different season in the sense that Arsenal is leading the league with 9 points after three games and 100% record. Different to last season. What is different?
Well, I think I'd say Arsenal have just started by playing their so-called strongholds. So okay. It's more or less like an elephant that is on top of a tree. You don't know how it got there, but eventually you know it will come down. So I think, it's a good start by Arsenal. It's a pretty young squad. I think Arteta has tried to mold the team into what he really wants out of them. And the players have full confidence in him. I think I actually like Saliba, and I hate to say this, but I think he's one of the top-performing defenders at the moment. I was watching him last season while he was at Marseille, mm-hmm. and he was pretty decent. In fact, he earned a couple of call-ups to the French national team. Yeah. So I think the performance by Arsenal so far, though it's still early days, it's pretty commendable. They are pretty solid at the back, and they are scoring goals for fun. So I think going forward, it will be pretty interesting to see how they perform. Though, of course, I know once the big boys come knocking, well, Arsenal will collapse as usual.
Well, you're speaking about the big boys, and someone who's a big boy who is lagging this season is Liverpool. They seem to be struggling too much. And I'm saying too much, Msafiri, because we're not used to seeing Liverpool fail to score in a game, fail to score twice in a game. They've lost the first game in 2022. Is it the right season for Liverpool this time?
Well, it's too early to say, Robert. It's too early to say because it's just the third game of the season. But you are, from the look of things, it's not been a very good start for them. And I know they have issues with injuries. We've seen how their attack has been. The coming in of Nunez is expected to boost their attacking strength because Mane left Bayern. And I think they are going to miss him. We've seen that, especially the chemistry Mane had with Salah. And it might affect them in a way before the new players start getting used to the formation they are used to playing. But I think it's too early to say whether they are going to have a good season or a bad season. From what I've seen, it's not a good start. But let's give them time, I think. But as a Man United fan, I hope they continue with their bad luck before they catch up to the rest of the team. We hope they continue dropping points. But it's really an interesting season, and I'm seeing we are picking up, and I can't wait to see how the season unfolds.
Okay, still a lot to get used to, and I'll start by just reading the league table. I'm not going to read all the 20 teams because I know we are not really interested, but we don't really follow Nottingham Forest that much and Everton. But I'll just read the positions of the big six. There's Arsenal on top with 9 points after three games, 100% record. Manchester City is second with 7 points. They 3-1 game and 1-2. Tottenham have 7 points as well in third position. They 3-1 game and 1-2. Liverpool now 14th place comes Manchester United with only 3 points after three games, one draw, two losses. Then the mighty Liverpool is at number 16. with only 2 points after 3 games. Now, I want us to go game by game, and I'll start with you, Vincent. Arsenal is on top. What has Mikel Arteta done very differently from last season that that is visible from the way they play this season?
Well, I think Arsenal has been a work in progress. The other day I was watching the documentary All or Nothing, and it basically goes into what Arsenal have been doing since the past season to where they are now. And I think Arsenal were so deliberate in the type of players they actually wanted, because as I said earlier, actually, if you look at Arsenal, Arteta has worked on the team from the goalkeeper to the striker. They are all players that he worked in those positions. So look at someone like Ramsdale, Aaron Ramsdale, who I think they got from, was it Sheffield or Bournemouth? He previously...
He was at Sheffield.
Then he also went for the likes of Tomiyasu, he went for Saliba, he went for Tierney.
He actually had to loan out Saliba again to Marseille after signing him.
Yes. Then this season he has signed Zinchenko. In midfield he still has the services of Xhaka and Thomas Partey. Odegaard has also stepped up. And of course they got Gabriel Jesus from Man City. So I think Arsenal were very deliberate in the type of players who they wanted. And they wanted players who actually fit into the system. I was watching the first match this season.
That was against Crystal Palace.
Yeah, that was against Crystal Palace. And you could see they had an identity. The players had this confidence to express themselves on the ball. So they are players who are really well trained. They have confidence in their manager. And they know exactly what they want to achieve. And if you look at the combination play in their front line, the likes of Saka, the likes of Odegaard, Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus. There's this admirable chemistry that is in these players, and they are young players who are still hungry to win, and they are players who haven't really won anything, save for Gabriel Jesus, who won trophies at Man City, where he was more of a player on the periphery. But now he is coming to a team where the manager has a lot of confidence in him. So this is a team that is very hungry. It's a team that is very dangerous. And I think even when the big boys play against Arsenal, they ought to be careful, because this is a team that has a style of play. They're not just all over the place. They have an identity. They have a purpose. And I think going forward, Arsenal will perform pretty well this season. I hope they don't. But then, to be fair, I think they're playing pretty good football and they're scoring goals for fun. And the best thing also is that they are pretty tight at the back. And to be anywhere among the top four teams in the Premier League, you also need to make sure that you're not conceding silly goals at the back. And I think at the moment, Arteta has got the players where he wanted them to be. And I think going forward, they'll just get better. Because, well, again, it's only early days, but you can see what the coach is trying to build the players. So I believe they're going to achieve more.
Okay, maybe Peter, you'd explain to us how important has Gabriel Jesus been to Arsenal, because I remember Arteta talking in the weekend that after that 3-0 win against Bournemouth, he's saying that Jesus had the capability to take us through the whole season if he stays fit, if he stays on form. What impact has Gabriel Jesus had since he joined from Manchester City?
Okay, one of the things, first and foremost, I agree with Vincent, is that nowadays you have games where you need a young players, very energetic players. The era where you had the Barcelona kind of domination and the ball moves and players don't move is kind of gone. And you need players who are going to be ready to run. They're going to cover a lot of distance. You can see that those are some of the metrics that someone like Conte changed at Tottenham. But going to Gabriel Jesus is that kind of a player. A player who is ready to play on either wing, a player who is roaming a lot. I think he's given a lot of that freedom in Arsenal. And he's a player who in Man City we saw try to perform, but then he did not have that, you know, that specific role. He did not have that, like, how can I say that, like, knowing that the team is really behind you as they are...
He wasn't the focal point.
Yes, he was not the focal point. And in Man City, you will understand, because if you're playing with a false nine, then...
You will never be the focal point.
But at Arsenal, he's come with that responsibility. And if you listen to Ramsdale talking about Gabriel last, they know this is their superstar, this is their focal point. This is the guy who's going to be scoring those goals for them. This is a player who has told Guardiola previously, and he said that start of last season when he started on the right wing, that I told my manager this is my best position on the right wing. Then you see this player playing on the left wing and he's still very good. You see this player attacking as a number 9, as a number 10, he's still very good. I remember once Neymar saying that he's played with many Brazilian players. Neymar at some point even played with Ronaldinho, and saying that Gabriel is one of the most gifted players he's played alongside. If you look at Gabriel Jesus, sometimes you don't see the flair. But sometimes, like he did in this last match in Arsenal, you know, takes the ball down with so much confidence, then takes on players without any fear. This is also a player who is ready to celebrate when his teammates take the, you know, the, score the goals and everything. He's so much part of the team. He brings that positive energy to Arsenal. Where one player can transform the fortunes of a team and the attitude and lift the team, such a player as Gabriel Jesus, then you can tell that you can feel like the whole attack is Gabriel. You might end up not seeing the impact of Saka, even if it's there, because Gabriel brings a different attitude, a different kind of energy, and scores the goals, gives the assist. I think Gabriel might be one of the best signings Arsenal have made in a long time.
Wow.
So for me, he's going to like transform their fortunes completely this season and seasons to come. He's still very young.
Okay, they bought Gabriel, but they also Msafiri. They also bought Alexander Zinchenko from Manchester City, and they bought in Pablo Vieira in the midfield. Now, fairly young players. Remember last season what Arteta did with Aubameyang, a very big player, influential. He just cut him out from the team. Now, these are young players from Arsenal, and Peter says they are very hungry. They want to win. Does their mentality have to be shaken this season, maybe when they go into Europe, per se, because they never had European football last season? Will their mentality be shaken this season since they are a young set of players?
When you have a squad with young players, it gives a lot of dynamic to the team in that young players are very aggressive on the pitch. Most of them are very fast. And of course, they are very hungry. So most of them have not really won too much silverware. So they give you that hunger that you need as a manager because of their age. And of course, they're still energetic. They're very strong. They can put in the work rate. But to win titles over a long time needs, for me, a mix of both the experience, which you need more experienced players, and also the energy of the young players now. And for big competitions in Europe, you need that edge and experience. You've seen what, for example, the Real Madrid side has done in the past few years. You've seen how they've managed, like last season, they managed to beat big teams, even though we would argue they didn't have better players. When you compare the Real Madrid squad and maybe City, you can say that City had the better squad, but just because of experience, you find people like Karim Benzema scoring goals for fun. They score goals in the last 10 minutes because of that experience they've had in the competition and also the years that they have between their legs. So I would say they might progress. They might do something in the European competition, but I don't see them getting that far because of that aspect of playing in the big leagues. There's just a different way. There's something Mourinho kept on saying when he was at Man United, football philosophy. They don't have that. As much as they are really trying to build a team, and I agree with Peter that Arteta is really trying to do something with the squad, and you can see the identity. They are trying to find a playing identity, but at the same time, they are lacking that edge or that comes with experience. So I won't give them. I won't give them much for European competition. But it's a start for them, and let's see where they get. But for the league, I think they can do a lot. Even in the league, it comes a time where experience sets in when you play big teams, when you reach the point in a season where there's too much pressure, you're supposed to win every game, especially now they're number one. How are they mentally strong, for example, to continue with the wins? So, and if they get a defeat now, how will they overcome that, for example? So it's a lot, to be honest, and we can only wait to see.
Okay, Kylian. Vincent, I want us to finish on Arsenal, but I want you to talk to me frankly about the season that we have. It's very different. We have a World Cup in between the season. So players, there's some things they prioritize before the World Cup and after the World Cup. And you look at this Arsenal squad. Last season, they had no European action. To add to this season, they have the World Cup in between. Is this, I'll keep asking this question again. Is this Arsenal squad enough to go to May next year on top without maybe adding three or more quality players?
Well, I think that is where squad depth comes in. And to be honest, I don't think Arsenal have the squad pedigree that probably Man City will boast of. So, and if you look at Arsenal, a couple of their players will definitely be the first names in their team sheets in the World Cup. Say maybe, well, Ramsdale might or might not.
Saka
will be there, Martinelli will be there, Xhaka will be there with Switzerland.
Opati will be there with Ghana.
Yes, and Gabriel Jesus will definitely be there. Ben White will definitely get a call-up. Yeah. Saliba, if he will be injury-free, he'll also get a call-up. So I think it's a pretty interesting season in the sense that there will be disruption of the rhythm that any team has going into around November. And a World Cup being in Qatar, for starters, then we also look at the weather conditions, how the players now will come back and maybe adapt to playing, to achieving the same rhythm that they had before leaving for the World Cup. So I think Arsenal don't really have the best of squads, considering that they'll also participate in the Europa League. Mm. So they are going to be stretched to the limits. Well, I think, are there many teams that will probably maintain the same rhythm after the World Cup? Maybe, maybe not. I'd say Man City, for starters, they have a pretty decent squad. Liverpool might also be there about. Well, for Arsenal, I think they might have a dip in fortune after the World Cup, but I think it's pretty early to talk about it, because again, I think the dip will even come before then, because I was looking at their fixtures, and I think, is it in October? They're going to play, I think, is it Man City, Spurs, and...
Actually, their fixture in September is quite tight. They have Tottenham, mm-hmm. they have Liverpool, they have some Leeds game away, which is always...
That's difficult. Which one?
That's September.
September.
And they have also Manchester City
yes.
to play.
Yeah, so definitely they're going to get at least two losses. So I think by the time we get to the World Cup, Arsenal will probably be around fourth or fifth. And I predict they'll finish around... let me be kind to them, fourth.
Okay, Champions League place.
Champions League place. Yeah, I think they're pretty good, and they're pretty good enough to finish among the top four teams, considering that teams like Chelsea are really struggling at the moment. So I think it's Arsenal's time to shine, but they often bottle this chance. Remember, there's a season when they were top of the league for a pretty long time. I think
half the season?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was when Leicester won the league.
Yeah.
Then they
just, that's 2016.
Yes. And they just collapsed towards the end. So I wouldn't really bank on them. But then again, I hope they do. And I think this is for Arteta, because he has really worked hard. And you can see what he's trying to achieve. But in terms of rhythm after the World Cup, I think most teams will struggle. And this doesn't only apply to Arsenal.
Okay, we want to move on to the next team that's just 2 points behind Arsenal in the log. That's Manchester City, the perennial champions of the Premier League. 7 points off 3 games. They drew once and won twice. Now, I'm going to, specifically talk about that Newcastle game, because that's when Pep said, these players need to live this. They need to feel what we are feeling right now, because they can't be perfect all the time. He tried to allude that we are not, as much as we have quality, we are not so perfect. Do you really think Pep is joking? Because looking at Manchester City's squad, really, they have the capability of going through the season all over again.
Well, I feel you can be very good, but you cannot be perfect. Remember, once you have a team like Manchester City playing against a team like Newcastle, there's somebody who does not have anything to lose.
Yeah.
That match. They're going to exert themselves fully. They have nothing to prove in that match. much. Man City, on the other hand, have everything to lose or to prove.
Yeah.
So you come to a match where Newcastle have the ability. Remember, they also have been spending. They have bought the likes of Kieran Trippier. You saw that free kick. He's a guy who is very good at what he does from dead balls. They have the likes of Alisson Maxim, who is a very, very good player.
Good. He takes on defenders very well. He doesn't pass. He doesn't really pass the ball backwards.
He does
that
not.
I noticed.
Yes, he does not. He's energetic. He's fast, and he's improved so much in his final, in the decision in the final third. And he's a player. I had fans asking, singing a song that is this another version of Hatem Ben Arfa?
Yeah.
You know. And you remember Hatem Ben Arfa, similar kind of player.
He was a baller.
A lot of talent.
Yeah.
Dribbling, finishing, assisting teammates. This is a wonderful player. Wouldn't want, if I were a defender, I'm avoiding, facing such a player. So you find that against a team like Newcastle, so much is expected of a team like Manchester City. Especially because we think, Newcastle is a small team. City should have an easy time. It's not that way. Newcastle, Crystal Palace, they are those teams that will always push you. The very end. They will know how to exactly combat your attacks and everything. What I liked most about the match is not actually that City suffered and dropped points. It is that City, as the team, was able to come back.
It was 3-1 down. It was 3-1 down.
Yes. That was so impressive. Because this Newcastle team, at some point, they look like they've killed off City. The game is done. They are cruising to a victory.
Yeah.
They might add another goal. You remember what was happening between Manchester United and Brentford.
Yeah.
You score and Man City somehow, Man U somehow lose focus and you score another and they give up.
The flood gets open.
Yes, the flood gets open and Man City did not let that happen. Mm-hmm. They get up and you realize that these players, no matter how bad the situation is, they still feel that they have the chance to get back into the game. And I think that's the attitude that took Real Madrid all the way to the finals and to win the Champions League. That mentality that we might be so many goals down, but there's still time. And a minute or two, that's a lot of time in football. And they have the quality. Did you see that Kevin De Bruyne assist for Bernardo Silva?
100%.
That is so much quality. I always say Bernardo Silva has a very special understanding with the ball. You look who is now seated on the bench for Bernardo Silva. It's Riyad Mahrez. You're looking at top quality. You look at Phil Foden. He's still in the team and you know anything can happen anytime. And you look at who is now your number 9. Even any half chance will be taken by Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
You remember the goal he scored in that match. This is a team, I was saying, I told somebody in the middle of the match, Man City should be playing 180 minutes. Because
yes.
In 180 minutes, Man City will still be fresh. With 5 substitutions now allowed in the league, and they have the quality on the bench, nobody will beat Man City if they're playing 120 minutes.
Wow.
And so for me, it's not much about Man City capitulating, it's about their ability to get back when things look really bad. And for me, that is one thing that will take them to the very, very to actually winning the trophy. Maybe that they will keep on fighting. That for Man City, you can never really say they are crushed and down. 89th minute, they will still find a way.
They can score 3 goals in 3 minutes.
They can do that.
Yeah.
They can do that.
They did
that
against Aston Villa in the last game last season. So,
you remember? Yes.
Yeah. Speaking about quality, Theori, you spoke about leaving quality players on the bench while others are playing. Kevin De Bruyne is on the bench while Mahrez is on the bench. Now, Kylian, Manchester City went not really all out. They bought Erling Haaland for around 56 million. They also bought Julian Alvarez and added Calvin Phillips, the Leeds guy in their midfield. I mean, is this too star-studded for Manchester City to the sense that even the World Cup won't affect them?
If there's one team that I'm sure will come back from the World Cup and pick up from where they've left, that should be Man City in the Premier League because of their squad depth. How Guardiola rotates the team week in, week out, and you can barely notice changes in performance or in their style of plays. It's so amazing. So I'm sure that they are one of the teams that will possibly maintain their performance and how they play after the World Cup, because especially now that it's coming in December, something that we're not used to. Many teams are going to struggle, but just because of the kind of players they've signed and also the identity that Guardiola has put in the players, you every player we selected in the team sheet knows exactly what the manager wants from them and how the style of play that he expects of them. So it's going to be very interesting to watch them, and it's quite sad for me as a Man United fan, because you know, have you ever watched, like, looked at a club and you see signs of them dropping?
Mm.
That's not you can't say that in City. They surprise us every other weekend. They have that winning mentality. The winning mentality that we had during Fergie's era. You know, we came into every game knowing that we're supposed to win. So even if we were 3-0 down at halftime, we know that we're going back on the other side of the break and we're going to win this game. We're going to score 4, we're going to score 5 past our opponents. And that's where I think City are. They have presented themselves as an unbeatable team, not just in the Premier League, but also in European competition. So it's an interesting team to watch. And they can, for me, from how I'm looking at things, it's going to be very hard to beat them this season, especially with the signings they've made. They've really made a statement, and it's really going to be, they're really making it hard for and also giving the main rivals a run for their money when it comes to the league. So let's watch this.
Okay, thank you, Kylian. Now, Vincent, still on Manchester City. Kylian has talked about the signing Calvin Phillips, Haaland and Alvarez is additional quality to the team. And this is a team that already has quality. Now, I'm looking at the next 5 fixtures, and I'm one of the people who always says Manchester City always gets a fair fixture schedule. I've never seen Manchester City being cramped up with Liverpool, then Tottenham, then Manchester United. They always get a fair fixture. And the next 5 matches are like this. They have Crystal Palace at home and Nottingham at home again. Then they travel to Aston Villa. They welcome Spurs. Then they travel to Wolves. So that's 3 away matches and 2 home matches. Vincent, how will this 5 matches affect Manchester City's season? If they win all 5, is their momentum up and running? Is their unbeaten? Are we possibly seeing another unbeaten streak in the Premier League?
Well, for starters, I think City are going to hammer Crystal Palace, a good one. So I think Erling Haaland will get a few goals. Then they are also going to beat Nottingham Forest convincingly. I think, well, the only tricky fixture might be away to Aston Villa. And I know Aston Villa haven't really started the league well, but I feel, looking at how teams are actually playing this season, then going away to Aston Villa might test their credentials. But that said, I think City have had a pretty friendly run of fixtures up to where we are now. And I watched their first match of the season when they beat West Ham 2-0. And they barely got out of first gear, and they dispatched West Ham with ease.
And it's fair to say they did play well in that game.
Yeah, in fact, they did play well, and they still won, and they didn't concede. So that says a lot about the quality of City. And for the past 2 or 3 seasons, City have often had a very slow start in the season. And I think they, wait not for KDB's brilliance over the weekend, they will have probably registered their first loss of the season, because Newcastle deserved all 3 points in that match. So I think by the time City play, say, Man United, and of course you don't know what to expect from Man United, because I think City is playing Man United on the first week of October.
Mm-hmm.
By then, I think they'll be top of the table. They won't have any pressure. You talked of the signings of Calvin Phillips and Haaland. Phillips hasn't really played for City.
Yeah, Rodri has been starting.
Yeah, Rodri has been starting, and you can't really question Pep's choice and faith in Rodri, because even Gundogan is playing pretty well in that position. So I think Calvin Phillips is one of those players who will often be used in some of these Champions League matches. And of course, he doesn't have a very good history in terms of his fitness. So I think Pep is also a bit cautious on how he intends to use Calvin Phillips. But I think he will be a very instrumental player when now it comes to the squad depth that we talked about, because City is a team that often goes for players who fit right into their puzzle, if I may call it that. Because, and I remember the other week, Pep was asked on missing out on Kukurea, who went to Chelsea, and he said he's not really under pressure because Cancelo can play that position. As much as he's a right-footed player, he still fits the bill.
Then the next day he goes on and signs Sergi Gomez.
Yes.
From Anderlecht.
So I think Pep knows the knows his team inside out. He already has like his footprint in that Man City team. So he knows the types of players that he wants in that team. And that's why he's not one who can be bullied easily in the transfer market. So I think City are in a very good position at the moment. And I wouldn't rule them out from retaining the EPL title. But I really hope they don't. Because I think winning three in a row is, should be saved for Man United. So, well, I hope they finish second. But then again, that leaves you with the likes of Liverpool. I don't want Liverpool to get to their 20th title either.
Yeah.
I don't want Arsenal to win the title either. So I'd rather give the title to even Nottingham Forest.
Thank you, Vincent, for that. Now, I want to move quickly to Peter, to another team, Tottenham. Tottenham Hotspur. And Peter, listen to these names. Ivan Perisic, Fraser Foster, Yves Bissouma, Richarlison, Jed Spence, and Clement Lenglet. These are all Tottenham signings this season. And Vincent talked about a coach trying to put his footprint into the game. We know Conte is a world-class coach. That's no dispute. How far will Tottenham go this season, considering that Conte seems to have a structure in place?
Well, first and foremost, I tend to disagree with people who say that Tottenham this season are likely to win the title. I don't think they are likely to win the title.
Mm.
I also tend to disagree with people who say that Arsenal are not going to win the title. I think Arsenal might win the title. Now, the difference between these teams, for me, I feel, is Tottenham has been a team that looks like it's on the rebuild for some time. They have had a lot of experiments. Probably we have not given them as much attention as we've given the likes of Manchester United, but they have had a lot of experiments that have some that have not worked as well as they would have liked.
Mm.
But if you look, Tottenham has not at any one point in the past many seasons fallen out of the top six. It's always been there. It's always been somewhere. Did very well at some point in the Champions League, going all the way to, was it the semi-finals?
Semi-finals.
And losing to, was it Ajax?
No. Final, actually, they lost to Liverpool in the final.
They lost, yes, they lost to, I remember them coming back with Lucas Moura,
yeah.
Scoring a hat-trick or
yes.
Two goals, I don't,
yes, yes.
Something like that. But Tottenham Hotspurs, I feel, are too dependent on individual quality, but they do not have an abundance of the same. For example, you have a Harry Kane who is now compared to the likes of Lewandowski and Karim Benzema because he scores at a very at an alarming rate in spite of him being in a team that does not have other people who fire as much. Then you have a Son who did very well last season. But outside of the two, although last season they were helped by that kind of transformation and bringing the likes of Kulusevski who has been really good, you find that Tottenham Hotspur is very dependent on a few players. I watched their match over the weekend, and I must say that their defense is still very slippery. You have
that match against Wolves was a hard one. It was an early kickoff.
It was a very difficult match. You have Davinson Sanchez, and I don't think he's a very solid
defender.
Center back.
Yeah.
You have the likes of what's this guy from Brazil who they brought in from Barcelona.
That's called Emerson Royal.
Royal is good. Now, at least Royal, you can tell his confidence has grown over time. He can really attack. But he's really nobody to cover properly for him once he's, you know, he's covered ground and he's trying to help in attack. You still feel that on the left side, they're struggling to know exactly who needs to start. They have Real Sessegnon, they have somebody else. And sometimes you tend to feel that they're not settled on people in some of their...
They don't really have a confirmed starting 11.
Yes, they do not have a goal. And that can hurt teams really much. Really, because you see, once you know that you will play your match and if it's horrible, King's going to come up with something and score a goal or Son is going to do something, then it's going to get a point in the season where you are really stretched if Son is not in, if Kane is not in, and now you will start now tinkering with your team too much, trying to find some balance and a track. But who must credit Conte? Conte goes to Inter Milan, and suddenly you see a team that's really fighting for the title. Conte comes to Spurs, and suddenly they come from being number 18 in ground covered to being position one in the final game of the season. This is a coach who demands hard work. When they went for preseason training in Korea. I remember the players posting on social
media. Yeah, all the pictures.
Yes, after training, they are all tired.
Yeah.
The coach demands so much of you in such a way that if you just have decent players, you're going to perform. I don't think anybody's autonomous reserve skill was that good when it came to Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
And I don't think Son would really perform at the same level in some teams. I do not know. But I think Conte has assembled some players who are not as good as some of the players in teams like Man City to try and compete at the same level. How? What I'm not sure of is if they can compete for the whole season at the same level. So I feel Spurs will do well. They'll be among the top teams in the season, but I don't give them chance of being in the top two or top three.
Okay. Vincent, I want to connect another team here because they played Spurs and got a 2-2 draw. That's Chelsea. This season now, they signed Koulibaly, the very recent Cucurella, and they also signed Raheem Sterling from Manchester City to boost their attack. However, there's this feeling that Chelsea is not there. It's not there yet. I mean, if you look at Chelsea on paper, those names are big. But if you look the way at how they play, I mean, what? One goal in three games? That's disappointing. What could be the problem with Chelsea?
I think Chelsea's major undoing was not failing to sign a proper centre forward going into the season. Having offloaded Timo Werner
and
Lukaku, Chelsea seemed to lack a focal point in attack. I was watching their match against Leeds, and there are times where Sterling was playing right in the middle, and there's no way you can expect crosses from the likes of Loftus-Cheek or Mark Kukurea trying to aim for Raheem Sterling, who wasn't so lucky to be blessed with height and expect to score a goal. So I think Thomas Tuchel this time, well, I understand he's in the market looking for a striker. Barcelona slapped a 30 million price tag on Aubameyang. I think at the end of it all, Aubameyang will probably go to Chelsea, and I think he'll improve the team. But all in all, I feel like Chelsea have gone a level lower than where they were last season. I was watching the likes of Kai Havertz, Mason Mount, and Pulisic, and how they're playing at the moment. And the team just lacks cohesion. Well, they brought back Conor Gallagher from Crystal Palace, and I thought he will improve the team. But then I feel like he's not the type of player who should be put right beside Jorginho, because, and no offense to Jorginho, but he doesn't give the team that sort of work ethic that you can get from, say, Sadio Mane or even Kovacic.
Mm.
So Leeds actually outran Chelsea by far. 3-0 was probably even a fair result to Chelsea because they were extremely poor, as in nothing was working for Chelsea. Then Mendy also decided to contribute to their poor performance by trying to dribble past a forward. So Chelsea are at a very, I think the team also lacks, it sort of lacks direction. If you look at how they play, I think they're not comfortable with the 3-5-2 formation that Tuchel is probably forcing onto them. Koulibaly is not comfortable with the ball. I was watching him being pressed by the likes of Rodrigo, and he was really struggling. He was just kicking wayward balls up front for Sterling to chase. So Chelsea really need to sort out their house, and they need to do that pretty fast, because at this rate, and if they don't get a striker, I don't see Chelsea finishing among the top four teams.
Okay, speaking about Chelsea, Msafiri, they seem to be harboring a lot of midfielders in their team. And they're also being linked to some player from Everton, a youngster called Anthony Gordon, for around 60 million shillings. Now, is this the position Chelsea needs to bolster in their squad? Because they bought Koulibaly for the defense, they bought Cucurella for the wings and also for the defense. They bought Sterling for the attack, but no one really in midfield. Because to be fair, Kante and Kovacic can't play every game. Do you really think that's the position they need to strengthen their midfield?
I think I want to echo what Vincent has said. Chelsea, to me, have an identity crisis. And that's the major problem they have right now. It's like a young man who wants to marry. Then you see a lady with a big behind, then you say, this is beautiful. Then you see another one with a big chest. Then
this is even more beautiful.
Then you see a black beauty. Ah, I like this one.
Yeah.
So I don't think they really know what they want to start with. They have a problem with identity in terms of the profile of the player they want. Also because the manager also too cool. He's not sure which style of play he wants to move forward with. To be honest, when they won the UEFA Cup,
the Champions League.
The Champions League. It was honestly they were not the best team, to be honest. They just won it because of sheer luck, and it was not because you could see that they had an identity in how they were playing. And of course, I think the honeymoon phase was over, and now it comes to now we have this child to raise. Which school are we taking him to? How are we raising this child? So I think the manager has a lot on his plate, and I don't think he has all the answers right now. And they're going to struggle. They're definitely going to struggle this season.
Talk about struggling, Peter. Chelsea face Liverpool, who are also struggling on the 18th of September. I want to speak about Liverpool. 2 points, 3 games. This is Jurgen Klopp we are talking about. They even lost to Man United. According to their camp, this is something that should not happen in the last 3 years. They lost the first game of 2022 just yesterday, just last night, just on Monday night. I mean, what is ailing Liverpool? Because it gets to a point where a team has become so good that it's hard to criticize any mistake they make. But it seems like they're struggling this season. They've not really got the keys in the ignition. What's happening?
First and foremost, now Liverpool meet Newcastle after the next match against Bournemouth. They are most likely going to lose that match as well. You see a Liverpool that's so different from any Liverpool we've had in the past few seasons. I have seen Virgil van Dijk struggling in back-to-back matches. I saw Mitrovic turning inside out.
Yeah, in that first game.
Yes. In this other match, you see Jadon Sancho, and this guy doesn't, Van Dijk doesn't have answers to these attacking Manchester United stars. The young guys, once he's taken one-on-one, he does not have these answers. You see a team where Milner makes a mistake and Van Dijk makes a mistake and they're in each other's faces. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that Liverpool did is probably think they were too good and they could do without like proper signings like City. You see, City is already very good, but they go for that player who is probably the best
young player they need.
Yes, and who is probably the best young striker in the world. They go for that top talent, however good they are. Liverpool instead let one of their best players leave, Mane. And Mane was a fighter, which they are not going to get anytime soon. Mane gave a press for like 90 minutes, never getting tired. If you watch some of the past clips from of Mane pressing, you'll realize that this is the guy who the keeper 30 yards away is with the ball, but Mane still thinks there's a chance of him pressing the keeper into a mistake that will create a goal for him. And sometimes he goes and does that. They don't have such a player with them. He's a very technically gifted player who will play for 90 minutes and still be as energetic as he was getting into the match. Now, for me, Liverpool do not have that quality. For so many seasons,
wow.
I always thought...
Wow.
I thought that it's something that Liverpool were getting lucky at some point and making us think that they really are that as good as City without necessarily having the same quality. Because like in the back line, you just need one very solid defender to make everybody else look good.
Yeah.
Now you have had Van Dijk playing so well. And if you put Gomez on the side or Matip or whoever, they look world class immediately. Remove Van Dijk and put Matic and Gomez together. You realize there's...
Shambles.
Yes, there's a problem. There's no calmness there. Now you have Trent, who is accused of being a horrible defender and a wonderful, you know, attacker. Probably he's very good in the final third, and he has one of the best passing ranges in football.
One of the best crossers of the ball.
One of the finest crossers of the ball. But then who covers for him once he goes, you know, to help in attack? You have Robertson, who is also very good on the other wing. But then you look at their midfield, and really in transition from defense to attack, it's a miracle that they're that good there, because they don't really have the world-class midfielders that teams like Man City have. But somehow they manage with Thiago, with Fabinho trying to be good, game in, game out, but he doesn't really get that level with Henderson. But then once you have Salah, who comes into the league as a winger and starts scoring goals that remind you of Van Persie's and of Drogba's, and you have Mane who is doing the same on the other wing, you even forget that Firmino was supposed to be your main striker and start now giving you know, explanation that he's the best number 10, he lets others get into the game. His feelings are actually hidden by the successes of the guys out on the wings.
Yeah.
So I think they have also, like Tottenham, relied on 4 or 5 extremely talented footballers to fool us into thinking that all the 11 players are world-class. One is gone. One of the players is gone. Another one in VVD is not having a very good start to the season.
Mm.
I don't know. I think we're just going to have like 3 more games and Salah is going to lose it now.
Okay, Vincent, like Peter makes a good point there that Liverpool feel like they are good, they don't really need this high quality players. But when City bid for Haaland, they immediately bid for Darwin Nunes and actually paid 90 million for Darwin Nunes. Liverpool never pays this amount of money. So far, from what I've seen, Darwin Nunes is an energetic striker, but his emotions get the better of him sometimes. He's new to the Premier League, we can understand. What do you think will be Darwin Nunes' impact for Liverpool? Because for the longest time, they've always not had a perfect number 9. They've always had Firmino, who comes to collect the ball from the midfield. But now they have an out-and-out number 9 who runs, makes those runs between the lines. What impact do you think Darwin Nunes will have on Liverpool this season?
Well, first, I like what Peter said, that Mane was giving Liverpool what Darwin Nunes won't give Liverpool. But then again, I think Darwin Nunes has his own strengths that will come good with time, because Klopp is the type of manager who also molds players into what he wants them to be. Darwin is still a young striker. And I remember when Liverpool got Diogo Jota, and I was wondering why they actually went for such a player, because I wouldn't say Jota was one of those star players that really shone in the league, but when he came to Liverpool, we started to see why Klopp went for him. And I think for Darwin Nunes, of course, his confidence is a little bit low at the moment. He's not used to the EPL. So I think in his defense, I'd say he might need some time to adapt to the EPL, because look at Sadio Mane. Before he came to Liverpool, he was a striker at Soton, where he was banging goals for fun. So he was already used to the type of physicality that the EPL gives strikers, and the challenge that a striker expects week in, week out. Diogo Jota was also a player at Wolves, so he was already well versed with what happens in the EPL. Darwin Nunes coming from Portugal, and he was actually playing for one of the top teams in Portugal, that's Benfica. So, and in Portugal, with all due respect, it's all about the two teams. It's all about Benfica and Porto. The rest of the teams don't really give you.
I think it's only Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano who get Sporting. Yeah.
Because Sporting, well, nowadays Sporting doesn't really produce the best players. Of course, they have players here and there, but they are, I'd call them bang average players. So, Darwin Nunes, coming from Benfica, where he was the main talisman and he was scoring goals for fun, because you also look at the quality of the league and the quality of the defenders he's coming up against. But then in the EPL, he comes now up against a different type of defenders. Most defenders in the EPL are actually tall. Well, Darwin Nunes was also blessed with height and the physicality. But then, as you said, I think emotions get the better of him, but he's still young, we can forgive him. And I think going forward, he will come good. His movement is pretty good. And I'm sure with the types of crosses that strikers get, the service strikers get at Liverpool from Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold, then I think he is a pretty safe bet. Of course, he won't score goals for fun as Mane did, but I think with time, he will be incorporated into the team and he will just fit in perfectly. So I think they went for the right type of player. Even Man United wanted the same player, but I'm glad we didn't get him. Though, of course, we still need a striker. But I think Darwin Núñez is a he's a good striker. He isn't the finished product, but I think he'll get there.
Okay. Now, Kylian, Liverpool lost to Manchester United on Monday night under the lights at Old Trafford 2-1. Salah came in with a consolation goal. Let's leave Liverpool behind. Let's talk about this team that beat Liverpool for the first time in 2022, Manchester United. And I know you are a big fan, passionate fan about Manchester United, but I want you to give me a candid opinion on Manchester United's season so far. 3 game weeks, 2 losses, 1 very, very big win. What next for Ten Hag?
Well, very interesting question. Of course, the Liverpool win gives the squad a very big boost because they are main rivals in the Premier League, based on the history of EPL and also the clubs themselves. And it's a boost lift for us, but we have a very tough away game at Soton. And for me, I think now Ten Hag's priority is just to get those ugly wins, because we could have lost the match. I would say we didn't kill the match, because we only scored 2 goals, and I saw at some point, even when you look at Salah's goal, it seems we relaxed a bit. We didn't bother to kill the match, and it might cost us points in very important games, because in Premier League people press for 90 minutes, even small clubs, and when a team gets 1 goal, they know they can get the next. Teams have been coming to Trafford believing that they can get points, and not only get points, but they can actually win games. So I think now Ten Hag's priority will now to build on this win, because the players still, of course, are very optimistic coming from a big game and a win in that case. But most importantly for him is just to make sure that first we dominate the game, and even if you're not dominating, one thing I've observed about United is when we concede first, it affects our attitude. And if Liverpool had scored first on Monday, it would have been very hard for us to come up from that. So make sure that the players are first to know how to win and win ugly, and to maintain the lead, especially in hard games like the one we had with Liverpool. It was a positive result, of course, but I didn't think I wouldn't get too much from it. Let's celebrate it, but we still have a very, very huge task ahead. I like how Licha played with Varane. I think that defense was very, very solid, and I would love to see more of that, to be honest, because he reminded me of Nemanja during his time at United. He gave his life for he was throwing himself at every ball, and also I also loved when Marshall came. He really brought some qualities that were not there. His link up with Rashford and also Sancho to some extent was very good. So what I'd love to see is him having a, of course, as we expect, I don't know if Antonio will come, but having a defined 11, a good first 11 that we can say this is our first 11, because I think he's still trying to understand his team, still to understand his players, and I don't think we might get an identity this season. Per se, I don't think we'll get a very good defined playing identity, because it's something that he's still trying to get. But for me, just get the wins. Get the 1-0s, the 2-0s, the 2-1s, those ugly wins, and continue that momentum. I think that should be the priority now, as we try to get a playing identity.
Okay, I'm going to come back to you, Vincent, before I move to Peter to finish with this Manchester United thing. Now, 3 names here are being linked to Manchester United, and I know it's far-fetched, but I'll start with it. There's Frankie de Jong, there's Anthony from Ajax, and there's Cody Gakpo, the PSV captain. Now, from reports this morning, Laurie Whitehall from The Athletic talked about how Manchester United have all but given up on their pursuit for Frankie de Jong, and the money has been maybe, and if you look at the money that Casemiro was brought in with, it's around the same amount that they paid for Leo. So possibly that transfer has maybe fallen through. But there's Antony and Cody Gakpo. Are this the solutions to Manchester United's problems at the wing? Because there's the Rashford issue, there's the Elanga issue. Gakpo is a winger. Antony is a very skillful winger. These are the only two players being linked to Manchester United in the last six, in this last 6 days of the transfer window. Do you think Man United needs them?
Well, I think Man United and the Man United fan base should first forget about Lyon. And I remember we had this conversation earlier when I told you the club shouldn't really go for players who don't want to play for the club. And you get the feeling that probably De Jong doesn't really want to play for Man United. Mm-hmm. He might want to play for Erik ten Hag, but he's not really happy about the idea of joining Man United. So I think, and the fact that we got Casemiro there, of course they're not the same type of player in terms of their qualities, but then I think the fact that we got Casemiro, we should probably think of getting a forward. Well, Antony can operate. Well, Antony is more or less Sancho. He's more or less like a Sancho or a Rashford type of player.
Yeah.
But then you get the feeling that he really wants to play for Man United. But I saw they have slapped a 100 million price tag on him.
Yeah.
I feel that is a little bit too much.
And it's because Man United didn't do this deal like a month earlier.
Yes.
A month earlier, remember, Antony was around 60.
Mm-hmm.
But Manchester United decided to go for Lisandro Martinez.
Yeah.
Antony's price went up.
Mm-hmm.
So is this, does this also speak to Manchester United's, let me say, management, or rather, I don't want to touch the owners because it's been viral this week. Does it speak to Manchester United's strategy in terms of those offices that deal with transfers?
Yes, I think we have wasted a lot of time in pursuing players who don't really want to play for the club. We would have invested this time in looking for players who are actually interested in joining the club. I don't have a problem with the recruitment of Lisandro Martinez and Malassi and Eriksen, who came on a free. But then again, I feel like the manager had prioritized certain areas of the pitch that he wanted to strengthen, and it's work in progress. So I have a feeling we'll sign either Gakpo or Antony. I'm leaning more towards Antony because he's the sort of player who really wants to play for the club, so I'm sure he'll give his best. Will either of the players be the solution to our problems? I think not. Man United is still a work in progress. I think the win over Liverpool was a confidence boost, but it doesn't really say that we have come out of the woods yet. So I think it will be a topsy-turvy season for Man United going forward. There will be extreme highs and very deep lows. So I think it's time to fasten the seatbelt for Man United fans because it's going to be a rough ride.
Thank you for that, Vincent. Peter Theory, fasten your seatbelt. For the first time, Erik ten Hag left Harry Maguire, the Manchester United captain, and 1-1 very big Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench. This is a statement in itself. This is a Liverpool match at Old Trafford. You're leaving two of the biggest Manchester United players, quote-unquote, at this time on the bench. What does this tell you about those two players, and what does this tell you about Ten Hag's attitude going into the season?
Once you're coach and you're going into a big club like Manchester United, which is a big club historically, you have to assert your authority, let me say. When Guardiola came to Manchester City, you remember, he threw the likes of nearly said Kevin Hart, your heart out, and also did away with Samuel Nasri, who both were club legends. And you have to put your foot down and say, these are the kinds of players I want in the team. Mm-hmm. I saw Cristiano Ronaldo had a very good attitude on the bench because I remember after Sancho scored, Cristiano was filmed clapping, showing some kind of support for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Before he, was substituted on, you could see him alongside Ten Hag, pointing at players and saying, you do this, do that for some few minutes. For some few seconds, I'll say, and you will tell that Cristiano Ronaldo and the coach had an agreement. You're not going to start in this match. You're not going to start because of this and that. Cristiano Ronaldo is, I think, has to accept that he might be one of the best players we've ever seen, but he's now not able to, you know, to handle defenders the way he would have done. He's not able to take to do what St. Pancras even did over the weekend. But he used to do that before he left Manchester United for Real Madrid. His game has evolved over time. And just to accept that he can't play all 90 minutes and still be magnificent against a competition that is as tough as the EPL is. Again, on the issue of Harry Maguire, I think it was an unfunny joke seeing Maguire start every single match because he's the captain of for whatever reason and underperform, you know. I still think it's also still a very unfunny joke that he's the captain with that kind of performance, game in, game out. You look at most club captains and they might not be the best players in the teams, but they're players who actually put their hearts out there and they do not contribute to the failings of the team. Look at Henderson, probably not one of the best, the most gifted midfielders out there. But once he plays like he knows he's the captain. He has to lead. If he tells you stop making blunders, he knows he's not making blunders himself. I don't know what Maguire is going to tell Manchester United teammates on the pitch once they make blunders and he is the guy who scored those own goals. So I think Ten Hag is asserting authority and telling them we're going to do it my own way, which is what every great coach is supposed to do. But I think with the likes of Ronaldo, with a player like Ronaldo, it's a sit down and an agreement that this is a 90-minute match and we really need the 3 points. We know you have the quality, but we need players who will be running in behind the defense, helping in the, helping our defenders, doing so much more than just attacking for the team. And because you're old, fine, we'll give you a few minutes at the end when we have tired legs out there. But first and foremost, let us use the younger players and try to see what they're going to do. So I think that was a very good statement from both players that I will put you on the bench and I, as the player, I accept your decision. I will give in my contributions once I come in and I will try to do my best in the last remaining few minutes. And I don't think keeping Ronaldo on the bench until the very last minutes makes...
He came in for 8 minutes. I mean, a whole Cristiano Ronaldo coming in for 8 minutes.
And against Liverpool. Yes. I don't think that makes us think that Ronaldo is less... You know, he's not as great as he used. We still appreciate that Ronaldo is the GOAT. Oh no, he's one of the goats.
We'll have a discussion about the other goats maybe
it's a very big slip of the tongue, but the thing is, we still appreciate that, but we also appreciate the fact that players grow old. He has done very well by still being in the game at this age. He is nominated for the Ballon. A five-time winner as well. So if Ronaldo were to sit on the bench and not play at all against Liverpool and he doesn't have an injury, every logical fan will understand that circumstances don't favor Ronaldo starting against Liverpool. As for Harry Maguire, I think Ten Hag should actually ship him out. I don't know, but I think it's time to ship out.
So Chelsea were bidding for him.
And that is also another very funny joke. Because you're looking at the Chelsea defense, you can't go from Rudiger, and now you have Koulibaly, and you have the likes of Thiago Silva. To Maguire. I mean, if Maguire goes to Chelsea, you're sure he's never going to get any time on the pitch. So that's a very unfunny joke as well. So I do not think Maguire is a player who should be playing for the very top teams in Europe. We have seen that time and time again. And even when Manchester United signed him, I don't know what they saw of Maguire from Leicester City that convinced them he was worth 80 million. One of the biggest problems with Manchester United is their scouting. I will say that again and again.
Mm.
And that one decision for Maguire actually explains everything. 80 million is a lot of money for such a defender.
All eyes on you if you're 80 million. If 80 million euros, everyone's looking at you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every mistake you make, everyone is watching. It's a big mistake.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, gentlemen, for this serious discussion about the state of the top six, teams in the English Premier League. Remember, this was the Warm Down podcast where we just analyze and discuss what has happened in the past week over in the English Premier League. We are in game week 4, so we'll come back after game week 4 and talk more. We've had Kilia Msafiri, our social media editor and a Manchester United enthusiast in the studio. We've had the deputy entertainment editor, Mr. Vincent Kejitan as well, who's avid Manchester United supporter. I think next time I'll get someone who's for a different affiliation. But Peter Theuri was also here. a reporter here with The Standard and a very good football analyst for us. So, gentlemen, thank you so much for spending an hour with the warm down. Now, if you happen to listen to us, we'll do this again next week after game week 4. And you can read all our content on standardmedia.co.ke and access all the premium content for 70 shillings a week, 199 shillings a month, and 1999 shillings a year. Maybe I'll repeat that. You can read all our content on standardmedia.co.ke, access premium content for 70 shillings a week, 199 shillings a month, and 1999 shillings a year. We love football, so do you.